you know, the original bill, Senator Lechtefeld worked on that, spent a lot of time on it. It was really an agreed to bill. It had bipartisan support, both in the House and the Senate, you know, passed with huge majorities in both of those chambers. And really the original bill was just trying to level the playing field for companies that do business here in Illinois and to give them the same opportunities that an out-of-state business would have. So, you know, that was a good bill. It was a sensible bill. It worked out with the business community, so on and so forth. You know, and then for the governor to completely rewrite the bill, I mean, to take the, change the whole focus of the bill, for one, is I think most people would say would be unconstitutional. And number two, I it has to be just simply a publicity stunt on his part, because he knows that the sponsor of the bill, who controls the action of the bill, he knows that Senator Lechtefeld's not going to move that bill forward. So, I think it was done just as a PR move for him.
Now, of course, I'm sure you've heard from some people who concerned about the shooting that took place in Colorado. I know you're a gun owners' rights supporter, but at the same time, do you think there's any common ground here of any way to restrict some of what gun owners can have access to?
You know, here's how I feel about it. If we want to sit down and have a conversation about it, let's sit down and have a conversation about it. If we can learn from something that happened with regard to the shooting in Colorado, if there's a way that we can, take some action to prevent something like that from happening, I'm willing to have that discussion. But, the whole term of an assault weapon, for example, we're talking about really the way the gun looks as opposed to what it will do. And most of the caliber of those weapons are the same caliber of guns that we use, to hunt with and, for sport shooting or whatever. So, I think maybe there's something to be learned, and I'm willing certainly to have that discussion. But, for the governor to come in, I think he's basically taking the hype from that awful tragedy and trying to use it to his own benefit, knowing full well, again, I want to stress this, Sean, that knowing full well that the legislation's not going to move forward. He took a bill that had been agreed to, that had been worked out, that really once again leveled the playing field, and to just completely rewrite it, it's just a stunt on his part.
Talk about the mechanics of what could happen with this legislation, because as you mentioned, now certainly the sponsor could decide, hey, let's call it for a vote and we'll go with and try to accept the amendatory veto. That's unlikely to happen. What else can happen with this piece of legislation?
So I think his Senator Lechtefeld, it would be up to him to make that decision, obviously, as to whether he wanted to accept the amendatory veto. And I have a call in today. I haven't spoken to him yet, but I have reached out to him to visit with him about this. That would be one option. Another option would be, of course, to try to override the veto. I guess I would assume that would be his intention, although I don't know that yet. I haven't talked to him. Maybe you have. But then we get into the issue of semantics as far as when the clock starts. Once the amendatory veto motion is filed, and when we go into session, and there's so many days that it has to be acted upon, I don't know all of the details on when that would start. I think some of that certainly would be up to Dave. Some of it's going to be determined by session. And as you all know, the governor's called us back into special session on the 17th of August. And so how that's going to affect this at this point, I'm not really clear.
Talk for a moment, if you could, about being a downstate Democrat in the Senate Democratic Caucus. Majority of your colleagues are not from downstate. Do they just view the issue a little bit differently? It really is an upstate downstate issue, it seems, a lot of times with gun control. Is it difficult to sometimes get that point across in the Senate Democratic Caucus?
Well, I think your analysis there is pretty accurate. It is more of a regional issue than it is a political issue, although let's face it, sometimes those go hand in hand just because of the geography. But it is. I mean, when I sit down and talk to my colleagues especially from the Chicago area, about the issue of guns and gun control and Second Amendment issues. I can really have a good conversation with them, and one-on-one we can probably agree on a lot of things. But obviously, their constituency is in general and total would have a different opinion than my constituency, and I think that they are reflecting the wishes of their constituents, and so. You know, that's when we get into some issues, and then we also know that politically this is an issue that can it drives voters. I mean, let's face it, this is an issue, depending on where you stand on an issue, whether what kind of folks are going to come out and support you or oppose you, and so they are very much aware of that, just like, you know, we are downstate.
Before I let you go, you mentioned a few moments ago the governor has called lawmakers back into session August 17th, primarily to deal with the pension issue, or at least to discuss that further. Give me your analysis of where this issue stands, and do you expect anything will take place when all of you come back to the Capitol later in the month?
You know, I think President Cullerton has the right idea to begin with. First of all, for the governor to call us back for a special session is that cost is really unnecessary, because I to my knowledge and what calls that I've made and trying to get information, I don't think there's been any kind of a consensus on an issue or a piece of legislation dealing with the pension reform. So, you know, if we don't have a bill to work with, I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do while we're in session there. Of course, the Senate has passed a bill over to the House. They could, in theory, take that piece of legislation up. I hope that legislators are doing what I have been doing over the last several days, and that is meeting with my constituents and really the people that are going to be affected by some of the proposals that are out there. Over the last 2 days, I've done a series of meetings and a roundtable type meetings with school administrators in my district. I invited other area lawmakers to join me, and we've had a really good discussion on what the impact, for example, and really the focus was what would the impact be at the local district level with the pension cost shift issue. If the pension cost for the employees here at the school district level, if that was shifted to the local districts, what would that mean to the districts? And I had, as I mentioned, three meetings around the district, had 30 to 40 school districts represented at each one of those meetings, and we really had a great discussion. I learned a lot, found out about the impact that this would have as far as in the classroom, how it would affect teachers, how it would affect children. And so it was, I hope other lawmakers are doing the same thing, because we need to find out, and it takes some effort to do this, to find out really what some of the decisions, obviously, that we're making in Springfield, how that's going to impact folks at home.
And you mentioned the shifting of the of some of those retirement costs to the local districts away from the state. At this point, could you support something like that, which the governor and Speaker Madigan say they're both in favor of?
No, certainly not as drafted. I mean, there is it's a gradual shift the way it's written right now, but ultimately it's going to put, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and in other cases, in some larger districts, you know, we're talking $1 million or more of shifting that cost to the local districts. And you have to keep in mind, it's really a triple whammy for the district. So we're shifting, the state would be shifting that cost to the district, so they're incurring additional costs on one hand. On the other, the second problem with that is, of course, they are receiving less money from the state under their general state aid formulas and the categorical grants. Those have been cut, so that's the second whammy. And the third whammy is most of these rural districts especially are seeing a drop in their EAV. So their assessment valuation, their property tax valuations have also been dropping, which means that they have a smaller pool of money to work off at the local, from the local tax revenue, real estate property tax revenue standpoint. So really, there's three negatives that are hitting these districts, and the bottom line is that it's going to mean less teachers, it's going to mean larger class sizes, it's going to mean less curriculum that they're going to be able to offer to their students. So At this point in time, no, it's not something that I could support.